Hello, and welcome to my podcast. This is an audio version of my videos, available to make listening to my stuff in the background easier than YouTube makes it. But since my videos are primarily made for YouTube, there may be occasional references to visual materials. If you'd like this podcast ad-free, you can join us on Patreon at patreon.com/vicerhino. Please enjoy. Hello, and welcome to my channel. Vice Rhino here. Today, we're looking at another episode of AIG Canada's Critical Thinking Scan series. This episode is about appeals to ignorance and incredulity, fallacies that AIG traditionally is pretty good at falling into, so let's see how good they are at describing them.
I'm Patricia Engler, and today let's examine a certain type of fallacy or faulty logic which may show up on both sides of the creation-evolution controversy, called appeal to ignorance.
Yes, this is a fallacy that does tend to show up on both sides. That said, one of the two sides relies almost entirely on appeals to ignorance in order to reach their conclusions, while the other side's conclusions are extremely well supported scientifically, even though some individuals now and again do make fallacious arguments. Any guesses as to which side is which here?
This fallacy happens when someone claims that a message must be false because there's no evidence for it to be true.
That is a reversal of the burden of proof. It is one form of the argument from ignorance, yes, but definitely not the only one, and one that is often used by people arguing for God. You can't prove there isn't a God. True, this is not usually a statement that is made quite so bluntly by professional apologists. In my experience, it's usually a defense mechanism for someone who is losing a theological argument. It is also important to understand the difference between a formal and an informal logical fallacy here. A formal logical fallacy is one where the conclusion cannot logically follow from the premises whatsoever. As an example, premise 1, all rhinos are odd-toed ungulates. Premise 2, all horses are odd-toed ungulates. Conclusion, all horses are rhinos. This doesn't follow, no matter how you look at it. An informal logical fallacy is something that can follow, but doesn't necessarily follow. An argument from ignorance is an informal fallacy. So, in some cases, it can work. In something like an argument for a personal interventionist god, certain evidence of this god's existence would be expected. The fact that this evidence is not present is an argument against this god's existence. It is technically an argument from ignorance, and by itself, it does not prove that there is not a god, but it is a strong indicator.
Or true because there's no evidence against it. For example, say two friends are out fishing when one says there are probably sharks around because there's no evidence that sharks can't live here. The other friend might respond, well, of course there are no sharks here. I've been fishing here for years and I've never caught one. Both friends just used the appeal to ignorance fallacy.
Yes, they did. But one used it better than the other one. You see, if we're assuming that the second one is fishing using bait and equipment that would actually be expected to catch sharks, then having fished there for years and not catching a single shark is decent, if not conclusive, evidence that sharks just don't live there. Yeah, it is still definitely possible that they do live there, but for some unknown reason they haven't been interested in this guy's bait, but it definitely does more point to there being no sharks in the area than sharks do live in the area.
After all, it's theoretically possible for sharks to be present even if nobody's seen them, or to be absent even if there's no evidence that they couldn't be present.
Yes, and one of those claims is much easier to prove than the other one. Show me a shark in the area, and the person who is claiming that sharks live in the area is immediately demonstrated to be correct. But if you search through all the underwater caves and come up blank, excuses could be made to explain why sharks do live there despite us not having found them. They just went hunting in a different area today, but they do live there, trust me. They swam out of that cave just before you checked it, but then back in right as soon as you were finished, so they are right there in the cave, you just didn't see them. And other such excuses. The more excuses that you make for why you didn't see them when you looked for them, the more likely it looks that they just don't exist.
And remember, by evidence, we're talking about facts from observational science.
Oh, so you have facts from observational science that back up your claim that God exists? Is that why AIG starts almost all of their science-related articles with an explanation about how scientists who disagree with them must be motivated by a desire to prove the Bible wrong, or prove there is no God, or some such similar nonsense? I feel like if there were actually science and scientific data backing you up, you wouldn't need to explain that the scientists all disagree with you because of a worldview issue rather than the data. You'd just be able to show the data.
That definition is important to keep in mind, especially when discussing evolution. For instance, I remember my first year biology professor telling our class, there is not a single piece of evidence against evolution.
That is a bit of a weird thing for a professor to say, but here's the real question. Were they saying that evolution is true because there is no evidence against it? Or is it more that there is a shit ton of evidence in its favor and no evidence against it? Being in a biology class, I would think it would be the latter, and that you'd spend your time in class learning the evidence for it. In fact, were I to hazard a guess, I would think that he was responding directly to a question with that statement, rather than just making that statement as part of a lesson. But, of course, I have no evidence for this conclusion, that is just me guessing. Now, if he were to have just said that there is no evidence against it and then proceeded to teach the course without actually explaining anything about how we know evolution happens, yes, that would kind of be an argument from ignorance. But as soon as that professor brings up the evidence for evolution, whether it be stated explicitly as evidence for evolution or not, it ceases to be an argument from ignorance and instead is relying on the evidence and just making a statement about his belief that there is no evidence against it.
Now, if we're talking about evolution in the sense of one kind of animal changing into a distinctly different kind over time,
then there is in fact plenty of evidence for that, because we see that happen within the single lifetime of plenty of animals. Any animal that goes through metamorphosis comes immediately to mind. Or even just the difference between you now and when you were a blastocyst. Oh, what's that? Those don't count because it's the same kind of organisms? Well, I must not have been operating with the same definition of the word kind as you, so pray tell, what is the definition so that we may straighten this matter out?
There actually are plenty of facts from observational science. In other words, pieces of evidence that cause problems for this idea.
There are a handful of data points that, when looked at out of the context of the larger body of research, appear superficially to cause problems for it, yes. And I suppose, depending on how we're defining evidence, this weak-ass shit can count as evidence against evolution. But given the mountain of evidence for evolution, the little tiny dirt pile of apparent evidence against it is not terribly convincing. Even less so once you realize that the small dirt pile, when properly contextualized, should be shoveled onto the mountain because it turns out to be evidence for evolution rather than evidence against it. What's left are maybe a few small pieces of dirt. The biggest points that creationists bring against evolution are things like irreducible complexity, an argument that, by its very nature, is an argument from ignorance. We don't know exactly what the evolutionary pathway was for this one specific feature, therefore it must have been designed. And the really amusing part of this particular argument is that the creationists often choose features that we actually do have a good idea what their evolutionary pathway was, like the flagellar motor. In order to accomplish this, creationists have to pretend that whatever feature they're looking at has always had whatever its current function is throughout every stage of development, ignoring the fact that evolution often works through repurposing existing materials for new functions.
But even if there weren't, saying molecules to man evolution happened because there's no evidence to the contrary would be an appeal to ignorance.
Yes, it would be. However, pointing out that there is no evidence to the contrary, while sitting on a mountain of evidence backing it up, would not be. I'm disappointed in this video. Typically through this series, Patricia has done a pretty good job of adequately explaining the various fallacies and how they are used, to the point where I've been able to directly apply her advice to AIG's material and show that using the very advice that AIG is giving, AIG is not a trustworthy source. You dropped the ball on this one, probably because this is the fallacy that AIG relies on the most heavily in order to make their content, but it's still disappointing.
But you know, I've seen evolutionists say that creationists often use appeals to ignorance too.
That's because the entire creationist position is based on appeals to ignorance. We don't know exactly how the universe started. God. We don't know exactly how life started. God. We don't know the exact evolutionary path for this particular structure. God. If your explanation explains everything without giving us any clear idea about any mechanisms whatsoever, then your explanation is not actually an explanation.
For example, when talking about the lack of transitional forms like half-bird, half-dinosaurs in the fossil record compared to what Darwin himself would have predicted,
That would indeed be an argument from ignorance, if it weren't for the fact that it is just flat out wrong. In order for it to be an argument from ignorance, we'd have to not have found any transitional fossils. Does ignoring things that we do know count as an argument from ignorance? Argument from ignorance? More like argument from ignorance, am I right?
Evolutionists, including the writer of my evolutionary biology textbook, often respond that there are plenty of specimens interpreted as being as transitional fossils.
Not interpreted as being, they are. But more to the point, rather than bring up an individual example for the creationist to hand wave away for whatever arbitrary reason, let us instead ask, what do you mean by a transitional fossil? If you're thinking of something like Kirk Cameron's crocoduck, then let us hypothetically agree for the moment that this would in fact be a transitional fossil. Now, given how fossilization works, would this very rapid change from one kind to another kind not be an incredibly rare find? You know, since a rapid change like that would mean that relatively few individuals would have existed in between the beginning and final forms of the animal? So in that case, we wouldn't expect to find very many transitional fossils at all. And if you'll admit that this is not actually what evolution suggests happens, that transitions are very, very slow and gradual and happening over thousands to millions of generations, can you not see how any one individual fossil might not appear to be transitional even when it actually is? Those are your choices here. Pick one.
Although you can learn about some of the problems with these interpretations in the linked resources.
Yeah, you can point out why you consider Archaeopteryx to be fully bird despite having teeth and a bony tail indicative of its reptile heritage, and you can explain why Tiktaalik is fully fish despite its clear adaptations to walking on land, but ironically, creationists often argue against individual examples as being transitional because some of the features that are transitional are not well developed enough to carry out the function that they are supposed to be transitioning into. For instance, in Tiktaalik, the argument goes that its fins, while more sturdy than typical fish fins, and certainly capable of pushing it around on land, are not going to be particularly great for walking, being better for swimming. Yeah, if they were better for walking, it wouldn't be transitional. The fact that they'd be okay for walking but not great is one of the things that makes it transitional. They literally describe why it's transitional and then follow that up with, and that's why it is not a transition.
They add that even if there weren't such specimens, the absence of evidence is not evidence of absence.
Well, sometimes it is, but in this case, it isn't even an absence of evidence. It is just creationists ignoring the evidence.
And technically, that's true. The fact that we don't see definite, clear, transitional forms in the fossil record can't itself prove those forms never existed, sort of like the fact that we haven't clearly seen human and dinosaur fossils together can't itself indicate that humans didn't live with dinosaurs.
One of these things is not like the other. For one, as mentioned, we have lots of transitional fossils, even by the definition of transitional fossil that is narrower than just pretty much everything, because every organism that successfully reproduces at some point in its life is itself a transitional organism. Second, the fact that there are no non-avian dinosaur fossils that have ever been found with human fossils is by no means the only way that we know humans and dinosaurs never coexisted. The dinosaurs went extinct about 65 million years ago. The earliest prosimians didn't arrive on the scene until about 10 million years later. Now, it is certainly possible that there will be prosimian fossils found that would change this perception to have them living with the last of the dinosaurs, but that's not very likely. And this is the group that eventually led to human evolution, with the earliest evidence for modern Homo sapiens showing up about 200,000 to 300,000 years ago. It's not the individual specimens that tell the story here, it's the overall big picture. The thing with fossil evidence is that we don't just assume that some creature existed without actually seeing a fossil for that creature. Now, we do occasionally make predictions about what types of fossils should be found where based on the data that we already have, but that is a far cry from just saying that we know humans and dinosaurs did not coexist because we've never found the fossils together.
It just means they weren't buried together.
By itself, in isolation, while ignoring all the rest of the data, yes, that is all it means. But if you have to ignore all of the data to get there, you likely aren't arriving at the correct conclusion.
So, to keep from using an appeal to ignorance, we can adjust our wording to say not that the lack of fossil evidence disproves evolution, especially because science being inductive can't conclusively prove things anyway.
You are technically correct. Science cannot, strictly speaking, prove anything with 100% certainty. In the case of evolution, it's only 99.9999999% certain, but creationists like to present this as though it's a 50-50 shot. It's not.
Instead, we could point out that the available fossil evidence is inconsistent with many predictions of evolution.
You really can't, though. For instance, if we go back to Archaeopteryx, when the first specimen was found, its head was badly damaged to the point where you couldn't tell that it had teeth. But, based on how old it was predicted by Henry Woodward that when a better preserved specimen was found, it would be found to have teeth. And, as it turns out, not even creationists deny that Archaeopteryx had teeth. That's a neat little party trick, being able to use evolution to make predictions like that when evolution isn't actually true.
But more consistent with what we'd expect to see from a global flood.
Does it still count as an argument from ignorance if you're not arguing specifically from ignorance on the topic in general, but are arguing more specifically from a Dunning-Kruger-esque, I am completely ignorant on the topic, but I know for certain that I am right stance?
Like what Genesis talks about. Likewise, another type of appeal to ignorance fallacy I've often seen creationists accuse of is the argument from incredulity.
Yeah, that's the one where you can't believe it could have been anything other than special creation, therefore it must have been special creation. Irreducible complexity falls into this category too. Wow, this thing is so complex and we don't know how it evolved, and I can't imagine it evolving by itself, so it must have been created.
Which states that a message is false because it's hard to imagine it being true. For instance, if a creationist says it's difficult to fathom how mechanisms like mutation could produce complex new structures, an evolutionist might respond, well, just because you find it difficult to fathom doesn't mean it didn't happen.
Well, at least she's explaining this one, right? Half marks?
So instead of just pointing out that it's hard to imagine how evolutionary processes could explain the existence of all life as we know it, we can show from observational science why that's so hard to imagine.
And I can show from observational science why God doing stuff is so hard to imagine. That's still an argument from personal incredulity. I find quantum mechanics really hard to imagine. That doesn't mean that quantum mechanics is wrong, even if I can show you why quantum mechanics are hard to imagine from a scientific perspective.
Not because we lack imagination, but because what we know from observational science is inconsistent with what would have to happen for life in all of its forms to arise naturalistically.
When you untangle the words that she just said, this ends up translating to, it's hard to imagine because we don't know how it could have happened. So this is literally the argument from incredulity being held up by an appeal to ignorance. I find this hard to believe. Here's a bunch of stuff that we don't have answers for, or at least pretend that we don't have answers for. Therefore, the thing that I find hard to believe can't be true.
That way, we can communicate truth relying on careful reasoning instead of potentially fallacious arguments.
No, you'll be relaying fallacious arguments that are slightly harder to figure out exactly why they are fallacious. Discussing the fallacy doesn't make it any less of a fallacy.
Of course, like we've seen in earlier videos, even if someone does use a fallacy to argue for biblical principles, that doesn't change the Bible's truth.
I couldn't agree more. Whether or not the person is arguing fallaciously, the Bible is still wrong.
But by avoiding potential fallacies as much as we can better communicate the Bible's truth for those who need the hope it offers.
The hope it offers is to worship the great megalomaniac in the sky or be tortured for all eternity. That's not a very hopeful proposition to me. That's it for this one. Today's comment of the day comes to us from Manic Pandas, who says, how much good could a good God do if a good God could do good? A good God could do as much good as a good God could if a good God could do good. I have nothing to add to that. Thanks for watching. Special thanks as always to my patrons, Lynn Dobbs, Mark McManus, What Jesus, and all the rest, who are the ignorance that bolsters the incredulity that is my channel. If you'd like to be the basis for most creationist arguments, you can join us on Patreon for as little as a dollar per week over at patreon.com/vicerhino. If you feel so inclined, you can also support the channel through direct donation or my Amazon wishlist, which are linked in the description. If you'd like to listen to my videos in podcast form, the link for that is also in the description, as well as links to my social media accounts and my P.O. Box address. See you next time.